Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, how should Muslims respond to or counter far-right extremist groups?
Anti-Islamic hate groups such as the English Defence League, Stop the Islamization of Europe, and others have come together to form a stronger anti-Islam campaign. Stop Islamization of Nations, SION, is a new organization aimed at tackling supposed jihadists in Europe, the US, Australia, India, Israel, and elsewhere. The group claims it also aims to highlight the Islamic supremacist attempts to restrict the freedom of speech in the free world.
Sir, be my guest. Yesterday,
today... It held its first International Freedom Defense Congress on the 11th of September this year, featuring speakers from across the globe. SION President Pamela Geller has recently been in the limelight for her controversial anti-jihad New York subway ads. She stated, "We are holding this Congress on the 11th anniversary of the day jihad came to America in order to strike a blow for freedom."
There is a gentleman here from Burma.
This week's Islam and Life asks, how should Muslims respond to or counter far-right extremist groups?
If you look at the situation in the West today, in Europe, or in the United States of America, what we can see is groups that are quite powerful now and vocal. It's quite clear that the Muslim presence and the new visibility of the Muslims is nurturing in far-right groups and people, extremists, who are trying to make Islam and to portray Muslims as the other and the danger. So we are using some concepts like jihad or sharia, or in fact just the Islamic universe of reference or frame of reference as the danger for the West today. And it seems that it's only marginal, and yet what we can see with the traditional political parties is the rhetoric is there, the statements are the same, even though it's coming from the far-right parties. So this is a very dangerous situation in the West today. What was said yesterday by the political extremist from the far-right is now normalized by other parties. So how can we deal with this far-right political parties? Should we respond? Should we ignore? What should be the situation, in fact, for Muslim citizens, European or American Muslim citizens, but by the society at large? What should be the right reaction? And these are critical questions for our democracies today. And to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajari. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I want to, you have been working on the ground for so many years, and you are advocating in the name of human rights something that should be the acknowledgement of the Muslim presence, for example, in the West, the dignity of their being and their dignity as citizens or as residents. And over the last years, what we have seen is the situation is deteriorating. It's really not the right way forward if we look at what is happening in the States and what is happening in Europe. So what is the state of affairs? How would you portray the situation as the far-right parties is concerned?
Well, all the far-right parties and indeed all the racists in the world have now sort of chosen Islam and Islamophobia in the way to manifest themselves. You know, they don't talk against race, they don't talk about color, they actually sort of hide behind this wave of Islamophobia, and they sort of just say we are against Islam and Muslims. And the reality is that, you know, this is escalating in such a way that is unprecedented. I mean, you know, there is not a week or month goes without some level of provocation. I mean, you know, the big ones like, you know, the cartoon or the film from California, it's sort of mobilized a lot of people. But there are lots of other events takes place. You know, for example, when a group of people went outside the mosque only a few months ago in Germany and put the cartoons and sort of provoked worshippers inside the mosque. And, you know, the way that the mosques are being attacked on a daily basis in France, in Belgium, in Britain, in United States and all around the globe. And it really is you know, happening so much that it's no longer a national news anymore. Yeah. And, you know, we as Muslims, we are damned if we keep quiet and we are damned if we actually complain. Yeah. I mean, you know, either way.
Before coming to what the Muslims should be and what we are reacting or not reacting, what are the reasons for this? How would you explain? I have two questions, in fact. The first one is, how would you explain what is happening? And the second is, why is it so successful? Because at the end of the day, it is success. They are succeeding in portraying Muslims as the danger. If you look at the surveys and the statistics, what is said about Islam now is very negative. So why is it happening?
I mean, you could go on Google and sort of type in Islam and you'll see what comes up. It's very clear. Mm. It's very negative, totally negative. You see, there are a number of reasons. There is a political reason which has been motivated. It suits certain people to promote this. And, you know, there is also, you know, we could argue that is this because of the Muslims or is this something other from outside? Mm. I think the reality is that it's actually the situation of the identity of European and Westerners, which is really is being eroded on a daily and weekly basis. Some parts of it because they're no longer French or British or German, they're European. And, you know, the influx of the sort of international community moving around, not just people from Middle East and elsewhere, but even internally, you know, the Polish community is moving. There is an erosion of that purest sort of identity. And whenever, you know, this has happened, people try to reinvent that identity. And to reinvent that identity, one of the easiest ways is to create an enemy and say that this enemy is attacking, mobilize everyone in creation of and revival of this national identity at the expense of those minority. This was exactly what the Hitler did. Hmm. This was exactly what the Serbs did. Indeed, this was exactly what the Crusaders did. I mean, after 100 years, when Muslims were in Palestine, they suddenly decided to start the Crusade, not because of what was happening in Palestine, but what was happening in Europe.
Solve other problems.
Of erosion of the Christian identity. Mm. And this, unfortunately, is an ism that is very ripe in the sort of psyche of the West. Mm. And now we see that is being mobilized. This super nationalism, which is targeting Islam, because Islam is sort of the obvious sort of target on one side. And it actually creates on one side the civilized and other side is the barbarians, you know? Mm. The otherness, you know, these are the others, you know? Mm. Once you create that, then genocide will take place, ethnic cleansing will take place.
Because,
well, it always has led either to genocide, ethnic cleansing, or holy wars. Mm. And what is happening is that actually this is very dangerous. And I believe that we need to unpack this. Mm. Unless we unpack this, we will not convince majority of Europeans and Westerners how dangerous this is and how ugly
but
this concept is.
While we're unpacking it, what would you say to some Muslim leaders or some voices saying, oh, there are many reasons, exactly as you said, there are many reasons. We don't know, we don't have all the reasons. One of the reasons could be to create the other. There is one other reason that could be that the Muslims themselves are not acting the right way with their presence. So they are nurturing this sense. What would you say to some of the leaders who are saying Muslims should be questioned about what they are doing because they are producing this type of reaction?
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at the history of the sort of racism, you see always the victims have been blamed for the races of the others, you know? Mm. And this, you know, without the exception, you could read through the history.
It's the coming back of the same.
I mean, look, it's your fault, you know, that you're, you know, and blaming them. The fact is that, you know, you know, when you look at the, for example, the film in California, no one in their right mind suggested that this film has got any value, either academic or truth or anything, but still was used and supported on the basis of freedom of speech. While on the same week, a young 19-year-old Muslim young man, for writing on his Facebook that the soldiers who are going to Afghanistan and committing A, B, C, D should die and go to hell, he was prosecuted and found guilty on a basis of gross insult. So you cannot grossly insult a soldier, you know, but you could grossly insult, you know, Muslim.
A religion. Muslim and the prophet.
And you could do it for no academic reason or no viable reason. I mean, that guy at least had a point, you know, on the issue of soldiers. But this film had no point to make except purely gross insult. But, you know, you see the sort of the double standard here. And you know, I even that young man, he had death threat made against him by EDL and others. And
was
the police,
he jailed? He was jailed?
He was actually given community services, but he was found guilty nevertheless. And there was emails of death threat against him, and police did not investigate a single one.
Yes, which is the double standard that we were talking about. Let me come to you were talking about, you know, the video in the States. We had the cartoons. Every 6 months we have a new controversy. If you think about this, and this is pushed also by far-right parties, but not only, but it's there. What should be the reaction by the Muslims? What should they react to this? And when they are, you know, having people like we saw in the clip, you know, these people are saying, you know, they are demonizing jihad and the Islamic concepts in order just to provoke the Muslims. What should be the reaction?
Well, I think you know, first of all, we need to ask for the equal sort of response from the authorities. You know, if you know, Al-Ghuraba has been sort of banned because they went in the streets against the soldiers at the time of funeral and started, you know, burning British flag and so forth and so on, and said these people are going to hell. If they're banned because of that, then EDL also should be banned because they do, you know, the equal opposite of one another. Indeed, they're very provocative, and indeed they're abuse. We've got a sort of situation, unfortunately, currently, that if you speak against sort of someone's color and creed, you're racist. If you speak against someone's sexuality, you're homophobic. If you, you know, you're anti-Semitic and so forth and so on. But if you actually criticize and abuse Muslims, it becomes freedom of speech. This sort of double standard should be eradicated, first of all.
So would you say the first step is really to work on the legal framework?
No, I would say the two track needs to go together. On one side, the legal right, as you know, as citizens of these nations, and we need to sort of stand up for equal right. On the other side, we need to actually unpack this, as I was saying. I mean, also unpack it. I mean, for example, we have seen EDL, for example, in Britain. Every time they are out there, you know, for example, on Quds demonstration, they're joined by the Zionists and they stand shoulder to shoulder. You know, these are the people who actually give Nazi salutes. And they're, you know, bedfellows with you know, Zionists and Zionist Federation. On Hawa, the shop which was targeted by sort of boycotting, we saw that EDL and the Zionist Federation came together. They were photographed together, and then they tried to actually hide and say it was Photoshop, but eventually they had to agree that this is, you know, was a genuine photograph. In United States, there is a fantastic report, research has been done, that all anti-Muslim organizations are actually funded, majority of funding comes by the Zionist background. So there is that aspect of the politics, because it would suit the Zionist state to actually strengthen this concept of civilized on one side, barbarians on the other side. You know, the wall is a wall for, you know, that separates the two. And that's why when you see in United States adverts going on the buses and saying stand on the side of civilized against the jihadists, support Israel, you'll see that this terminology has got a political connotation and origin, which actually comes from where. But I personally think that we need to expose it. You know, let's face it, whenever Holocaust happened, whenever ethnic cleansing happened, or Holy War, which was as a result of this high level of demonization, no one was winner. Neither those victims or those who perpetrated this, because that's a little sort of cancer that destroys the society. And I actually think that we need to work on that level to recruit overwhelming majority of people on our side that, look, this is a cancerous disease which has, you know, which is lose-lose. There's no winners here. Mm-hmm.
But this is a very important point, because what you are saying is that there are trends within our societies today in the States or in Europe that are working on this. The link between what is happening here and Zionist supporters is quite clear. Now it's known, and you know, many are reporting on these links, and it's a financial support, ideological support. Okay, having said that, you just face it, you expose the people, you expose some of the reasons, you expose the far-right parties. By doing this, what should be how can we, beyond the Muslim community, reach out to people who are not Muslims and they might not understand the complexity of what we are talking about?
We have to unpack it. You know, I mean, look, if we go out as just concerned victims, we're not going to get a hearing, you know? We need to go as concerned for our society as a whole and unpack this. And you know, small sort of radical or extremist white supremacists and so forth are very small. But the impact on the main structure.
Exactly.
Main parties are speaking with the same voice.
Exactly.
And, you know, you could say Conservative Party, etc. You know, recently there was a poll by YouGov which actually asked people regarding the issues of race and immigration and so forth. 37% of people in Britain said they want the number of Muslims to be reduced, and they will vote for the party that actually promotes that. How do you reduce the number of Muslims? Either you have to, you know, kick them out, or ethnically cleanse them, or you know, forcibly change their belief. This is outrageous, you know? And I think we need to speak out on these issues and make sure that what is unfortunately happening now, you know, we used to have race card because there were more racist than there were people from ethnic minorities. So politicians were all becoming racist, you know, policies to get more votes. Yeah. Now we got Islamophobic card. You know, it's reality is that there are more people anti-Islam and Muslims. And so therefore politicians, to get popularity, they actually compete with one another on this issue. Even some Muslim politicians actually playing this game.
Yes, exactly. But how can we, when I was involved in political discussion, many people were telling me, just avoid talking to the far right or expose them. In fact, by talking to them or exposing them, they will get more publicity. And even if you are succeeding, you are failing. Because the more you succeed, the more they are using this. Look at the people. They now know how it works. So how can you do this? When, for example, you look at the situation, what you were saying about, you know, the numbers, the great majority of the Europeans see the Muslim presence today as a problem. So what could be the step in order to go beyond the victim mentality and to say, okay, look, we are exposing
I think we need to combat this new phenomenon in Europe and elsewhere of creating this supernationalism. You know, if you look at, you know, the concept of supernationalism, it's never been a very positive one, because it was supernational. I remember, listening to a discussion and, you know, how Britain was so worried about increase of nationalism in Germany because it was going to cause problem and lead to wars. That sort of super nationalism has never served the society well. We need to combat that. Why do we need that sort of super nationalism? Why can't we have a much wider identity? You know, we need to sort of work on that level, because if we only work on the symptoms of this, which is i.e. the far right, then we are not going to get anywhere.
Yes. So how can we need
to challenge this rise of nationalism.
How would you do that?
I think we need to show the ugly aspect of it. I mean, it's not just in Europe. I mean, look at Myanmar. You know, what is happening is this rise of supranationalism, which is being used for bonding these societies together as expenses of Rohingyas, which is causing the problem. What happened in former Yugoslavia? What happened in Germany? This we need to, I mean, it's very obvious. But the problem is this, that we have not even begun to address this issue on that level. We really haven't.
When you say we, it's
I think Muslims and those others who understand this.
Okay.
You know, I don't think it's not an issue. It's not an issue that just affects Muslims. Mm. You know, because once this cancer is unleashed, it will affect all of us.
Yes. So, but what can be done practically to trust? To get the awareness when the media are not talking about what you are doing, when the perception is very bad. Many of the Muslims that I'm meeting, you know, at the grassroots level, they say it's as if we are helpless. We don't know how to deal with the situation.
We haven't really dealt with it on this level. I mean, how many internal discussion have you seen that we're actually dealing with this issue of supranationalism and the need and the thirst of this recreation of and a strengthening of identity for the cause of this thing. We haven't even discussed it internally. We haven't really gone out to convince anyone else. We have reacted. I'm actually not against reaction, but it's better to react than not doing anything. But reaction is not alone. It's not enough. We need to go far beyond that. We need to go and look at the causes of this and actually expose those causes.
It means what? It means a kind of a new narrative about...
We need to actually organization which only targeting this organization and indeed, you know, doing the research, writing academically. You know, we all, I mean, you, me and others, we need to go out and be voice of this and actually say, look to the international community and to our fellow human beings that this is a very dangerous road that we are going down, and it's already is you know, we've gone halfway, and it seems that we are continuing vigorously down that route. We need to stop it. Look what happened in Norway. You know, this is just the beginning of the whole thing, and we need to tackle this. I mean, if we are spending so many billions on against radicalization of Muslim community, we need to spend even more on stopping this sort of radicalization of extreme right and the causes of it.
So in this, would you say, for example, if we think about a way forward, if you think about it now, are you optimistic? Do you think that it's going to be worse, or there is something that can be solved in the whole process?
I think if we honestly go and deal with this, we could solve it. Otherwise, we actually are for dark days ahead.
Thank you so much for this. I think it's important to listen to your voice. You have been working at the grassroots level and deal with this. And it's very important to acknowledge the fact that things is moving in the right, in the wrong direction. And beyond the legal situation, and you are stressing this, we have to go for the legal struggle, because at the end it's to be treated equally. But it's not only this, it's something which is deeper than that. It has to do with history, memory, unpacking the whole reasons that you were mentioning. It's something which is very important for Muslims and people of other faiths, because at the end what you are stressing and repeating, it's an important point. This is the destiny of our nations, and not only the Muslims within the Western societies. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion, so please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Masoud Shajari. Thank you so much for your presence and your input, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah. We'll be right back.